Then you like the sound of Calvin Chamberlain's voice.
Hello, Mary.
What's up, boss? Here we are, ladies and gentlemen. It's Careless Whispers on a Wednesday night. My name is Matt Rury. That was Calvin Chamberlain. And we are on CLNS Radio. We're going old school tonight, and I'm just going to get it going. I'm not going to even get into anything other than the topics. Here we go. Let's just kick it right off. We're starting with the Celtics topic, Calvin. And actually, I lied. Before we get into that Celtics topic, I might as well tell you about the Celtics game that is coming up in a few weeks on February 10th. That's right. Old friend Paul Pierce is coming home. And we, CLNS Radio, are giving away tickets to you, the fans, and the listeners. CLNS Radio and Tick IQ have teamed up. You're going to the game. You're going to get in the building. And we're going to draw one random winner to win a pair of tickets to go to the February 10th game against the Clippers. We're drawing that on January 31st on Celtics Beat. So listen to Celtics Beat to see if you're the winner. All you have to do to enter is follow CLNS Radio on Twitter. That's it. Very simple. Follow us on Twitter. You probably already are. If you're not, go follow and you'll be entered. Maybe you'll be the one to win the pair of tickets. And don't forget, if you don't win those tickets, you can purchase tickets to all your local sports teams and concerts and shows by downloading the Tick IQ app for your iPhone or Android, and get 10% off your first purchase if you use the promo code Boston on the app. Not the website anymore. It's the app. Go get that app and use the code Boston when downloading it when checking out there on your first purchase, and that's it. You get 10% off. All right, the meaning of that was to tell you about the Celtics game. You can get there. Now we're going to talk about the Celtics. And they're playing right now. They were just down 15 again or something like that and came back to take a lead at halftime. And Calvin, despite pumping me up, I don't know if you're going to let me down here. Maybe you can come up with some random ones off the top of your head. We were going to go over some Celtics potential trades tonight. That was going to be exciting.
Was it? I thought you hate trade talk. I love trade talk, but...
Well, in the past, I've turned away from trade talk because it's tough to speculate on who is available. And on the teams, when the Celtics were playing well, I didn't even care to talk about it because most of those guys I wanted to stick around. But I don't know. This team, it's obvious they need a trade, so I'm willing to talk about it. How about that? I'm more open to the idea.
Nice. Well, here's the thing. Let's talk about why the Celtics need a trade for a moment before I just jump right into trade talk. Right. I'm thinking about this team. It's not just that they're sort of in that mediocre. I loathe to say mediocre middle. But, you know, mediocre sort of bottom of the playoffs, top of the lottery area where they're probably not going to win a first-round series as currently constructed, but they could. And then they're not bad enough to really get a high lottery pick. People say you need to get out of that zone. Whatever with that. That's not even it with me. With me, it's just the fact that they have all these draft picks, right, that they keep drafting guys every year. And what comes of those draft picks at this point? They don't have space, or more importantly, they don't have minutes to keep giving guys who come into the league every year. Right. do you feel confident in knowing whether or not Kyrgios here is a good player? Do you feel confident in knowing whether or not James Young is a good player?
Oh, James
How
Young
do you feel
is,
about
is,
R.J. Hunter?
Yeah, I feel okay about R.J. Hunter from what we've seen, but, I mean, obviously you can't project that long-term with such a small sample size. The other two, James Young doesn't look that good, but he's still very young, no pun intended. And Rozier, we have no clue at all.
Okay.
So, no, you don't feel good about those guys. And Calvin, yes, that's a concern because they have another three draft picks this year in the first round, and that's going to produce very capable players. So I'm concerned here that Danny Ainge has quite literally shown his hand in saying, I have these picks, and I need to trade them or somebody, and he's not going to get good value for any sort of deal that he wants to make because people know he has to make a deal.
Great. To the best of your knowledge, have any of those three played more than 20 minutes in a single NBA game?
I don't believe so.
Or even 20 minutes. Have any of them played 20 minutes? Maybe in a blowout? Probably
that's,
not.
That's,
I
mean,
I
that's... I'm gonna do a quick basketball reference search on that, but I don't believe so. I'm going to say probably not.
Yeah, so needless to say, you know, maybe you've seen glimpses from James Young. I haven't, you know, I feel like I haven't seen enough of him to have any opinion at all. So, I don't know. I feel like the horizon is not looking good for these guys getting minutes anytime soon. With the already, you know, David Lee can't get minutes on this team. Tyler Zeller is essentially went from a starter last year to a guy who couldn't get minutes if his life depended on it. Right?
Oh, so James Young on February 15th, 2014, played 20 minutes and 6 seconds in a game that, let's see, where's the score of this game? Boston, wait a minute. The Celtics beat Denver 104-100 at home in that game, and James Young did play 20 minutes. So I guess that is probably his most significant minutes, but it's also, Calvin, in a stretch. And actually, look here, the last game of the season last year, he played 24 minutes. So that 20-minute game was in a stretch where he played 17, 20, 11, 17, 18, 10, 18. So I would imagine somebody was hurt at that point, and he was forced into playing.
All right, well, I take it back. I guess we do know. But the book is out on James Young.
That's right. The other two, though, Rozier definitely not, and R.J. Hunter, I will look right now, but I don't believe so.
All right, so yeah. So the bottom line is the Celtics have way too many guys, and they
oh,
have to start.
I'm wrong again. We're both wrong again. On November 24th this season, against the Hawks in Atlanta, the Celtics lost that game by 25 or 24, and Hunter played 20 minutes. That's it, though. He's played a couple 18, 19, 17-minute games this year, but that's about it.
Should have said 24 minutes. Burn myself.
Yep, you should have. So these guys are getting stats to back it up. There they are. The point is, no, they still don't have enough time under their belt to determine any sort of consistency that they may have going forward, and definitely not enough time to figure out whether they're better than a college player that we don't have any clue whether they'll play well in the NBA because they're not a clear number one type of guy. It's not like it's an Anthony Davis like type of situation. Ben Simmons will be a good player, right? But after that, I don't even know. And especially if the Celtics are looking at their third pick in the first round, they're going to get a somewhat capable player, but it's going to be another situation like we're seeing right now where they won't crack the lineup for a little while and you won't be able to tell and you're just sitting on these players. And that's why I say that I think Danny Ainge has sort of tied his hands here and teams are going to take advantage of that and milk him for everything he's worth and not give him good value.
Yeah, Brandon Ingram of Duke is supposed to be a good player as well, but I don't know. I haven't seen enough college to know one way or the other.
We need Mad Dog to come back on this show and get a segment and do some college basketball talk for us. That's what we need. Maybe we just need callers in general. 323-642-1484. You can give us a call. There you go. All right, Calvin. what sort of trades have you come up with for me to analyze as far as the Celtics are concerned?
All right, I got some trades, and these are all guys who you can get conceivably. You know, I threw out, sure, it'd be great to get DeMarcus Cousins. You know, I did a Celtics post-game show the other day, and I threw out, you know, guys like Dwight Howard and even Carmelo as, you know, possible guys that you could get with the right offer.
Right.
And
we've discussed that on this show before, too.
Yeah.
Yep.
We have. And yet, the guy I was hosting with was like, well, I'd like DeMarcus Cousins. Well, you know what? I'd like DeMarcus Cousins as well, Rory. But DeMarcus Cousins doesn't mean you can get, like, just because you want DeMarcus Cousins doesn't mean that you can get DeMarcus Cousins. So he's not on my list. These are all guys that are gettable. So, again, you may look at these guys and say, why would I want this guy? Well, there's a lot of reasons why you might not want this guy. This guy might need a change of scenery. Some of them are not necessarily that old. Some of them fit the Celtics system. So here goes. All right? First guy on my list is Jared Sullinger, Kelly Olynyk, and the Mavericks pick for Markieff Morris.
I'm going to start by saying that Sean Grandy has been preaching the whole entire Celtics game tonight that Kelly Olynyk is in the top five in the NBA since Thanksgiving in three-point shooting and leads the Eastern Conference in three-point shooting. So I just want to throw that out there before I say no on Markieff Morris. Because personally, Calvin, I think that his attitude regarding just not being able to play with his brother is kind of an issue, and that his brother has taken he's playing better in Detroit than Markieff is. Marcus, that is playing better than Markieff. And I don't know if I would want him here. And I think that we already have that guy and you're sending him away in Jared Sullinger. To me, they're very similar, and I would almost rather have Sullinger than Morris anyway. So I'm going to go no on Markieff Morris.
Interesting. What if I saw, first of all, in regards to what you said about Morris, my understanding is that he and his brother took a sweetheart deal from the Suns. He's only making $8 million this season with the idea that they wouldn't split up, he and his brother, and the team sort of backstabbed him and then traded his brother. And that's why he's angry about it more than, you know, just the simple fact that he traded his brother.
That's fair enough. That's fair enough. And if he's willing to play for another team, then fine. Maybe his attitude will get better. But I still kind of look at him as just a little bit better than Jared Sullinger. And especially the way Olynyk's been playing recently, I wouldn't quite give up on him yet. I still wish that he could get a little quicker with his feet. But I don't see that as a winning move for the Celtics for some reason.
What if I were to make that same offer? Okay, I'd swap out Olynyk for Evan Turner. Evan Turner, Sullinger, and the Mavericks pick.
That's a little sweeter. Although I did tell Nick Sesento on the post game show the other night that if they signed Evan Turner to a long term deal, I am at the point where I would accept that and not complain about it. That doesn't mean that I want them to do that or that I think that they should overpay for him or something of that nature. But I have come around on Evan Turner. It does sound intriguing to free up a guard spot and give somebody else some more time while also somewhat upgrading the power forward position. Morris is a little bit better than Sullinger, I will say that, although I think they're very similar, and that's why when you throw Olynyk in there, I'm not so sure I want to make that deal. But if you're talking about Turner, Calvin, I don't know. I'd have to think about it. I really would. I'm not sure on that one.
Well, think about it. We're doing a show here.
Here we go. What's next? I'll think about that more, that Turner deal. That's, you know, all right, let's go with it. Let's go with the Turner deal. Turner, Sullinger, and the pick. We'll take Markieff Morris off the Suns' hands.
Okay. All right. The next trade is David Lee Olenek, and the Celtics' own pick in next year's draft for Greg Monroe of the Milwaukee Bucks. Just signed a contract, does not really fit their system, slows them down immensely. They could use a player like Olenek. David Lee's contract, with Olenek basically fills the Greg Monroe contract situation.
I would definitely do that deal because while he slows Milwaukee down, I don't think that he would slow the Celtics down too much. You've talked in depth about how the Celtics are trying to do the Golden State Warriors thing, and Andrew Bogut is one of the slowest centers in the league. Now, granted, he doesn't get more than 20 to 25 minutes a game out there, but if that was going to be the role for Greg Monroe and maybe a little bit expanded, I would take that in a heartbeat. That sounds like a big win for me and the Celtics if they were to be able to pull that off. So, yeah, I'll take Greg Monroe for sure.
Speaking of the Celtics, how 96-90 through three quarters against Toronto? What is going on?
Yeah, the defense has left the building tonight in that game, but the Celtics had a lead at halftime, and Toronto just took it right back in the third quarter. So,
okay, well, we will keep our eye on that game, see how that goes. All right, Rory. Now, this guy's been thrown out recently as a possibility for trade, and I'm sure you might have anticipated this. This is a guy who fits right into the Celtics system, essentially, or at least what they want to do. Unfortunately, he's another one of those guys, like seemingly all the big men in the Celtics rotation, who provide value on one end, but much less value on the other end. This scenario, again, a David Lee contract, Celtics pick in next year's draft, and I'm trying to decide. Hey, you like Solinger better than I feel like Olenek. It would have to be Olenek, just logically. For Ryan Anderson.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to have two wing shooters at the power forward and center position. That's what Anderson would bring you. I'm a little torn on Anderson. He's a little injury prone, if you ask me, and he's had some tough injuries, so I don't want to knock the guy because there have been some freak things that have happened to him. But he is a stretch four, but I'm not really sure what that does for you as far as improving your situation for a championship. I feel like a deal that you're getting rid of, if you're getting rid of Kelly Olynyk, you need to improve on that position for more than just the next year or two, because the window is still not open unless you make some more moves and there's something else to come from that. So I feel like you need a bigger upgrade than that if you're going to deal Kelly Olynyk away.
Fair enough. So your thing is you're trading for an older player in a situation where you're not getting yourself out of that hole that you're in.
That's sort of why I would be okay with that Markieff Morris deal. He's a younger player and an upgrade, a slight upgrade over Jared Sullinger. If you're sending Sullinger away, if you're going to send Olynyk away, I wouldn't want to get a player that's more of a short term situation. I'd still want to upgrade young if possible.
Okay, fair enough. All right.
And that's, you know what, just to expand on that, that's because I think Kelly Olynyk has improved vastly in the past 365 days. The calendar, not the calendar year, but the last NBA year, if you will. I feel like he's improved quite a bit, and I think that he's going to keep getting better. Now, I'm not saying that he's going to be an all-star someday. I don't believe that. But I think he's going to be a serviceable stretch four, and if the Celtics can find a way to piece in players around a guy like that, I think that he'll be an asset to a pretty good team down the line.
I actually agree with you. I think he has really progressed nicely, as opposed to a Sullinger who I think has regressed from maybe what he was in his second year.
Yeah.
Last year. Yeah. I don't know, it's a lack of confidence or what, but he
and maybe not, you know what, maybe not even regress, maybe just sort of stayed a little stagnant. Sellinger hasn't done anything crazy this year. He hasn't really taken a step forward. I wouldn't necessarily say it's a step back, but he's just sort of seems to be the same.
Yeah, but I think in his second season there was a lot of optimism about Sellinger. He seemed more aggressive, particularly as a rebounder. And a guy who did post play. Maybe this offense is not ideal for him. And I know, like, nobody wants to see Jared Sellinger attempting threes. I don't know how many calls I've taken on Jared Sellinger's perimeter game. But, yeah, I don't know. Maybe the system is just not right for him. Maybe it's just the NBA's direction is not right for him. I hate to be that guy. Even though I don't completely believe that notion anyway, but...
You know what? I read a quote from him the other day. I don't know if you saw this or heard this anywhere. Maybe Jared provided it to somebody on the post-game show when he did the Garden or the Grandstand App locker room report. Who knows? But Sellinger was – somebody asked him about why he stopped sort of taking as many threes. And he said it's not that he's not taking as many threes. It's that he's not focused on where he's taking threes. Apparently, for the first – 2 months of the season, he was worried about analytics, and he used the word analytics in his answer, and he was worried about like his shot chart and where his threes were coming from and trying to get them on those sort of free throw elbow extended type of threes instead of in the corner or the top of the key, or maybe the top of the key was one of his choices as well. But the point is that he was basing things on that as opposed to trying to get them in the flow of the game or where he's comfortable. So he said that more recently he's just started to shoot wherever he is, and it doesn't matter if he's behind the three-point line or not. He's not trying to force a three. And I think that's a smart way to look at things, but I'm not sure why he wasn't doing that before. Maybe it's overconfidence in his ability to knock the shot down, but doesn't that come from the coaching staff as well?
Interesting. That's weird because I feel like he's, I mean, maybe I need to see a shot chart, but I thought like, I don't know what he's at this year, but last year he was at like 24% three. So I imagine that his shot from anywhere along the 3-point line is not great, right? Maybe he has one spot where he's really good and he was trying to get to that spot. But yeah, I don't know. Murray, I have one more for you.
Here, I found the I found the quote here. Let me just get
okay.
The just pull into where's this thing. Oh, this website fooled me. It's a headline exactly with the quote that I was looking for, and you go to the website and it's just a bunch of his numbers. Roto World, we'll go there instead. That site fooled me. I should have just stuck with the old faithful here. Okay, here's the exact quote. Sellinger has decided to do shooting analytics. Quote, I think that was my biggest thing is that I was worried about where I was popping at. I didn't want to shoot it along two. Analytics say to shoot the three. I just threw the analytics out the door. Wherever you pop, just shoot it. And so that's his mindset going forward now. Wherever you pop, just shoot it. So he was worried about getting out to the three-point line, and I think people that watch basketball, and him in particular, have known for a very long time that he should just shoot it wherever he can get free. Doesn't matter.
Right.
He shouldn't have to come out to the three-point line, you know, and that would still fit within the flow of the offense. So I'm glad he's finally realized it, but it took a while.
I mean, Avery Bradley and Evan Turner don't mind taking long twos, right?
Right, exactly.
So,
they live on that. And Evan Turner's a horrible three-point shooter, so he knows he needs to get that mid-range two-pointer. So Sellinger should just follow those guys' lead. And you know what? If he starts to do that, teams may start to sag off him a little more, and he may be able to get free to make some moves in the post for once, which he has very good moves in the post. That's ultimately, I think that he should try and get towards that in his game and become that low post player because that's where he belongs in the NBA, if you ask me.
I just feel like, yeah, he does. And I feel like he used to, I don't know, I just feel like he hasn't been as aggressive this year. And maybe the 3-point thing you're talking about is part of it. Maybe analytics has gotten in his head, and he's had his moments. I know he really had that shooting slump for a while. That might have affected it, but I don't see the intensity from him that, you know, I've seen in his best games. All right, Ray. In any case, I have one more. You're probably not going to like it, knowing what I know about you.
Knowing what you know about me.
Yeah.
So he attempted 208 threes his second season, 184 last year, and he's taken 70 so far this year. Go ahead.
Okay. Are we at what game are we on in the season?
We're on game 41.
Halfway, right?
Exactly. Halfway.
So he's about 40 off his. If you double
per
that
game,
up, he'd be about 40 less. Yeah.
Per game, he's cut it in half. Per game, he has cut it in half, but he's also not playing as much, and in general, he's not shooting as much. So you have to factor that in too. Anyway,
that's a good point.
Last trade?
Per minute, he might not be that far off at all. Okay.
Oh, you know what, Calvin? I have that as well.
Yeah.
Would you like that? That's actually almost – last year he shot 4.2 threes per 36 minutes, and this year shooting 2.5.
I stand corrected.
There you go. So it is down. His shooting he's shooting less this year. And what is this stat? 3-point attempt rate. Oh, this is probably a good one. If you like those analytical stats, bring in the analytics. Sloan Sports Conference here to the Careless Whispers. The 3-point attempt rate is the percentage of field goal attempts from 3-point range, Calvin. And this is much lower than it was last year. He shot 23% in his second season, 26% from 3-point range in his third season, and this year only 18% of his shots have come from 3-point range, so he has drastically reduced that.
Fair enough.
Done. Done with that. That's enough of the stats for the night, huh? All you stat geeks out there.
You're the stat
master.
Welcome. I did like that last one. That's a good stat. Because it takes into account the fact that he's taking less shots this year. You know what I mean? So it's really a pure number of what percentage of those are less threes. Anyway.
Correct.
Last one.
All right, last trade. Let's go.
All right. David Lee contract is just gold. Evan Turner and the Dallas pick for one Rudolph Gay of the Sacramento Kings.
Oh, boy. This one I go back and forth on over and over and over and over. Part of it is factored into the fact that part of the thing that I factor in is I'm not really sure how tough Rudy Gay is. And by that I mean sometimes he comes off as kind of a soft player. I'm not sure if that's because he's been in the wrong situations. I don't know if he's a number one scorer. Maybe he's a 1A type of scorer. And I don't know if he can lead a team like that. With that being said, the thing that the Celtics need more than anything in my mind is scoring from the small forward position. He can play a little four as well if he has to. I guess he can, if they want to go big, he can play the two guard. But he'd pretty much be playing small forward, if you ask me.
And that's
what they need more than anything, Calvin. Do you disagree with that?
No, I don't. I think you're right. I think that swing man position.
Okay, so people would argue that Jay Crowder's the three, and they just signed him to a long term deal, and he's great, and he does all these things. And I would say Jay Crowder can play anywhere you want him to play. So forget about Jay Crowder in this situation. Forget about whose minutes Rudy Gay is going to take. Bring him here. If that's a deal that they would accept, then bring him here because he can score, and he's a significant upgrade over what they have now at that position.
Well, the answer to the other question of whose minutes he's going to take is obvious. He's taking Evan Turner's minutes. I mean, Evan Turner plays half of every game. Look at his numbers. You know what I mean?
That's right. He does play a lot of minutes. But, I mean, Gay would still be getting more than that. Turner plays, what, 30 minutes a game, something like that. Gay would be playing well, probably close to 35, if not more. So there are somebody else would still have to take a hit there, but I'm saying it doesn't matter who it is because he's still an upgrade, a significant upgrade.
And Rudy Gay gets a bad rap, but if you look at his defense the last couple of years, it's improved. It's not he's not a great defender, but he's not a bad he's not a liability on that end at this point. I'm talking myself into thinking maybe you'd have to go Dallas and your own pick, but
I'd be okay with that too. You know what? At this point, that's fine with me.
Yeah.
They still need to keep some of these other players. They're forced to.
Right.
So I mean, don't draft
you're
anybody
clearing
else.
Clearing up a roster spot.
You know what? If they like Jordan Mickey, who's a player that they have now as well, and he's been playing really well in the D League. If they want to keep him around, that's one more draft pick next year that you pretty much can't use. So you've
right.
got to free up something. So that I'm fine with that.
Here's the only draft pick that really matters next year for the Celtics is that Brooklyn Nets draft pick. Let's be honest.
Yep, that's right.
Yeah.
Unless it's Dallas implodes.
Yeah.
That's not going to happen.
Dallas
at this point,
it's pretty obvious that Dallas is not going to implode to the point where that pick's going to have a ton of value. You know what I
right.
mean? Like maybe they slip into the late lottery or maybe the Celtics slip into the late lottery, but the value in even having the number 12 pick is like it's kind of whatever. I mean, it's cool.
it's another RJ Hunter. It's another
right.
Terry Rozier. It's another I don't know.
Right.
I don't want to say Justice Winslow, but. Frank Kaminsky. That's it. Yeah, that's who it is.
Right.
You know, it's not a player that you really want on this team right now.
Right. Frank Kaminsky is a perfect example. Yeah. It's Doug McDermott.
Who's the name that I saw yesterday? And I was like, this guy. It's Sam Decker.
He is totally Sam Decker. Yeah.
Sam Decker, man, I just feel like people were talking him up a little bit right before the draft, and what has he done? Let me use my Google machine, my basketball reference, to see what Sam Decker has done this year, because maybe we're talking bad about him and we shouldn't be. But no, seriously, that's all it is. The point is that the Celtics really don't want to use that mid-round draft pick. They shouldn't use it. It doesn't make any sense. Sam Decker, for the record, has played 6 minutes this year. He has not scored. He has a steal and a rebound.
Wait, 6 minutes total?
6 minutes in three games, yes.
He must have gotten hurt, right? Now you're going to have to...
I don't believe so. I don't believe so, Calvin. Has he? Oh, wait. Yeah, he did get hurt. You're right.
Yeah.
But November 15th, he sustained a back injury, and this says he's expected to miss 3 months. So that's right around now. He should be back relatively soon, right? When did these minutes come?
Yeah, those minutes must have come at the beginning of the season.
Or they've come more recently. Yeah, they did come at the beginning of the season. But it was 1 minute, then 4 minutes, then three did not plays, then 10 seconds, then two... DNPs, and then he went inactive basically for the rest of the way. So I'm not so sure that he cracks Houston's rotation. The point is, I don't think, injury or not, he wasn't going to be playing.
That's fine, but my point is, much like, you know, your James Jens and your RJ Henners of the world, we don't know that he's good. In fact, even more so in his case, because he's
right.
played 6 total minutes.
That's why you don't want the pick. That's why you don't want that pick that's going to
yeah.
fall at 16,
that's
17,
why.
Even 12
exactly
for that
why.
Matter. You don't want that pick. Get a player like Rudy Gay and include those picks in there. Oh, my goodness. Bring him. Bring it on. But the point is, I don't think that sounds like a great value. Danny Ainge can't get that value. He can't get that value from Sacramento. They're not that stupid, are they?
Well, they are that stupid for two reasons. One, again, you're getting the two first round picks. Two, Rudy Gay's under contract for a couple of seasons, and David Lee's a free agent, so you're getting the free agent money on top of that. But three, I guess I only gave I only threw in Evan Turner, so maybe that's an issue. But I feel like the two first round picks. If you're Sacramento, you have to take that risk. What's Rudy Gay getting you right now?
Man, I really hope that that deal goes down. Then I hope that Danny Ainge is listening to us and he finally realizes something, and that Sacramento, yeah, Danny Ainge is listening to us, and that Sacramento says, yeah, that's a great deal. Let's do it.
And in fact, I forgot that the reason I thought of Rudy Gay.
That was in reference to Danny Ainge listening to us. Sorry. The reason you thought of Rudy Gay in the first place.
Is that the Kings offered Rudy Gay straight up for Ryan Anderson and the Pelicans said no. Yeah.
Well, sounds like the Kings are that stupid. It's a bad move, Sacramento.
I just Googled Rudy Gay, and I'm getting Sacramento Kings trying to trade Rudy Gay before the deadline.
Oh, boy. Go get him, Danny. Somebody call Danny Ainge. Somebody out there listening has Danny Ainge's phone number. I know you do. Call him. Make sure he gets on this. This is the deal. This is the deal to make. I don't care how much he likes Evan Turner.
That's your favorite deal.
Listen, I've been wanting an upgrade for a small forward since they traded Paul Pierce. Since the day they traded Paul Pierce, I've been wanting that upgrade, and it hasn't come yet. And I don't know if it's going to come anytime soon. If you could pull the trigger on a deal like that, I would absolutely take it. All right, Calvin. This has been the longest opening Celtics segment in the history of Careless Whispers. I think we should move on. What do you say?
Yeah, that's fine. I would just real quick though. Can you imagine the small ball lineup with Gay and Jay Crowder as 3 and 4? That's pretty strong.
I really like it.
Right?
It is pretty strong because Crowder can make up for any deficiency he has on the defensive end. Plus, he's a pretty good player on offense, so they would have to respect Crowder a little bit, and that would give Rudy Gay a lot of room to work. And I would really like that. That would be great.
Anyway,
to see.
Yeah.
Pipe dream, maybe. We'll see. We'll see if something happens. That would be wonderful. In the meantime, when our show's
super
over,
short and everything else.
Yeah, that's fine. We can. In the meantime, when our show's over, you should go check out audiblepodcast.com/Celtics and take a look at the over 180,000 audio programs that you can download. And we used to give you a free one, free audiobook, but now instead we're just going to give you a free 30-day trial. You can download as many audiobooks as you want for 30 days for free. It's pretty sweet. That's, again, audiblepodcast.com/Celtics, and check it out. The one that they're telling you to go look at and then listen to once you look at the description to it is Rise of the Robots, Technology and the Threat of a Jobless Future by Martin Ford. Doesn't that sound exciting, Calvin? Jobless future.
I'm ready to have no job.
No job, but the robots are going to take over, so you're going to really have to probably be a slave to them.
Sorry if they don't make me work.
All right, 30-day free trial, audiblepodcast.com/Celtics. And that's audiblepodcast.com/Celtics. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. What button do I want to push? Let's play random. Let's see. I'll tell you how many clips are there here. 1, 2, 3, 4, 7. Looks like there's about 20 clips here. Give me a number 1 through 20.
17.
Gonna make sure it's right then. Oh, wow.
Wrong!
That's it. That's all it is. We're really only 17, so I'm gonna play this. We're having fun. All right. Next up on the Careless Whispers outline, if you will. It's not an outline. It's a four-thing list. Another NBA topic. Guess what, Calvin? I bought four Golden State Warriors tickets the other night, yesterday, today. whichever day you're listening, that's when I bought them. I bought them this afternoon. And I'm going to the game in Oakland that the Celtics are playing on March 31st. So that's exciting. And the reason I tell you that is not so you'll stalk me and pick me out at the game, which good luck in that stadium. It's huge. It is that our next topic is the fact that those Golden State Warriors completely whooped up on the Cleveland Cavaliers and LeBron James in their home on their home court. And there are also some rumblings coming out of Cleveland that I saw today. People speculating about things that Kevin Love had to say, which I'm not going to get into any speculation on that too much, but we'll tell you about that. What did you think about that game the other night, Calvin, and what does it mean for the Cavs? Do they need to reassess their situation in the middle of the season here? Are they in trouble because they got smoked by the defending champs?
Yeah, they're in trouble. Let's do a little backstory first, shall we? So, I don't know how much you've been keeping up with the talk in and around this game, but you know, the other day when Kyrie Irving came back and he had a good game, I think he scored 27, LeBron, you know, said after the game, he said, you know, Kyrie Irving is the best point guard in the game, right there with Steph Curry. So,
man. Hold on. Can I just say quickly before you finish the description of this, people and players in this league, I don't care who you are, LeBron James, I don't care if you're the best player in the league, don't compare anybody to Steph Curry. He's the reigning MVP. He's doing it again. And don't talk crap about the Golden State Warriors. Even if you go out and beat them, like the Milwaukee Bucks did, don't talk crap about them because they will beat you the next time. And they're going to come out with a fire under their ass and kick your ass. And that's what they did to Cleveland. So continue.
Okay, well, before the game the other night, apparently Steph Curry said to somebody that Quicken Loans Arena can't still be Quicken Loans, right? It's got to be something else.
I believe it is. I'm sure it is. The Q.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. So it's still Quicken Loans Arena. He said that it still smells like champagne from when they celebrated their championship, which is a pretty awesome trash-talking line, if you ask me. It's pretty hilarious. And, you know, LeBron, of course, somebody immediately ran that back to LeBron, of course, and LeBron said, oh, well, we'll have something for them tonight. Now, the Cavaliers got blown out when they played the Warriors on Christmas Day, or, you know, not blown out, but beat by a significant margin. And the thought was, okay, you know, they were going to come into this game looking for payback. They don't play again this year. Again, those quotes were made before the game. And they went out and got systematically destroyed in their own building.
As most teams do. Let's not discount that. This is really more about the Warriors in my mind than it is about Cleveland. But maybe you feel differently. Maybe you feel like Cleveland is just turning into a shell of themselves. But either way, most teams get systematically destroyed in their own building by the Golden State Warriors, except for the Celtics.
I sort of do feel differently, and the reason is they also have lost to the Spurs twice. You know, they got Kyrie back in Love, and they started rolling, and everyone thought, you know, the Cavaliers are back. But really, they're just fake back. I guess this is what it's coming down to me. I typically don't put a lot of stock in regular season games in terms – I mean, I do because I enjoy, you know, watching them, and I just love the NBA. But I don't necessarily put stock into, like, how this is going to affect the playoffs. But I think in these special scenarios, when teams have particular motivation, they're not going to play again this year. You know, they sort of had that rivalry already happening. LeBron was angry that, or, you know, used Kyrie as, like, part of the reason why they lost this year. This was their time to, like, show the NBA, or more importantly, show the Warriors that they can legitimately compete with them. And they got obliterated. Kevin Love and Kyrie didn't play particularly well. LeBron, you know, played okay, I guess. But he saw them in the game get frustrated, like Steph Curry hit a three, and then he guarded LeBron the next play, and LeBron, like, one-handed shoved him to the ground. I don't know if you see that. I feel like clearly they wanted to win, and, like, I just, this game just made me realize that I don't believe in this Cavaliers team. I think that they're ripe for the taking. And they're probably going to be going back to the finals, but I don't think that they can beat either the Warriors or the Spurs. I'm writing them up right now.
Did you see the Kevin Love quote after the game that some people are talking about right now? Or would you like me to read it to you? Or both?
Read it to me.
Because I want to know if you are going to read anything into this, or if you just think that it's maybe being taken out of context, or that he didn't mean anything by it. But somebody asked him about being blown out and what needs to be done, how they're going to fix things. And he said, "We have a lot of things to get better at. That's going to take a lot of guys looking themselves in the mirror. And it all starts with our leader over there and dwindles on down," sort of motion or pointing over to LeBron James.
Yeah, this is a super fascinating element of the Cavaliers, which it's kind of under the table, but not really, which is that Kevin Love and LeBron don't like each other. Now, they're both nicer guys than Shaq and Kobe, so, like, you don't see the kind of sniping that like, was in that era of the Lakers, but and neither one of them are, like, crossing the line at that level. I don't know if they hate each other at that level, but LeBron, you know, LeBron recently, like, posted a photo with, like, J.R. Smith and Kyrie Irving, and, like, he's in basically, like, a bunch of Cavaliers hanging out, and Kevin Love took that picture. There was, like, a rookie on the team, I forget his name. Kevin Love took that picture of all of them hanging out and, like, superimposed his own face over the rookie's face on Instagram. Don't know if you know about that. Yeah, he was trying to be funny, but at the same time, it's like, yeah, LeBron, like, doesn't want to hang out with Kevin Love, and Kevin Love doesn't want to hang out with LeBron. And you see this all the time, you know, when Kevin Love had, like, last year, this thing about, like, he's trying to fit out instead of fit in, and LeBron was like, why don't you stop trying so hard to fit out and just fit in? And I think there's all these quotes all the time sniping back and forth between them. And, yeah, I do think that when he talks about how they need to look in the mirror starting with LeBron, that was a shot directly at LeBron. There's no question about it to me. Are you there? Did you mute yourself?
Yeah, I did. Good call. No, that's fine, though. I don't think that he meant anything by it. He started by saying a lot of guys looking themselves in the mirror, although, you know what, maybe you're right now that I look at it again. He didn't say it starts with him and LeBron. It's just he said it looks like a lot of guys, and it starts with LeBron, basically. So, I don't know, Calvin. Maybe I'm on the fence and leaning towards your side at this point. Fair enough. That's it for our NBA discussion tonight. So if you want more NBA talk, you should check out the Celtics post-game show later tonight. Because when this game is over, in about 10 minutes, when we go off the air, they're not sharing our station, but if you want to call them, you can call them at 347-215-7771. In about 10 minutes, it's Jess Thomas and Corey Prescott bringing you the post-game show on the other Blog Talk Radio CLNS station. So check that out in a little bit once we're done here. It'll be fun. Anyway, we move on to a non-NBA topic. It's the NFL, Calvin, and it's been so long since we've talked about some NFL stuff on here that we are in championship week. Can you believe it? 3 weeks from the Super Bowl, we're about to find out on Sunday which teams are going to be there. And that is, time is flown by, if you ask me, in that regard, because I feel like we haven't talked about the NFL in just a few weeks, and we're already here.
So who do you like, Murray? Give me some picks. Tell me why.
Do we want to start with the NFC? Let's start with the NFC. We'll deal with the Patriots Broncos game last in this segment in just a few minutes. Let's start with the NFC because I know less about it. I would have to imagine that Carolina is the team to beat in this situation, right? They have been playing so well this year. They have arguably the MVP of the league, of the conference, I should say, in Cam Newton, and they seem to have it all together again. And that team not only has Cam Newton making plays all over the field, they have a lockdown cornerback, and that is the type of team and the type of defense that is prepped to go to the Super Bowl. And I don't know if Arizona can pull magic out of their hat 2 weeks in a row here, especially going up against the number one seed Carolina Panthers. That team has been running through almost everybody this year, Calvin, and I expect them to win on Sunday.
Yeah, that's funny because I'm taking the Arizona Cardinals. I think that they're just as good defensively. In fact, arguably even better if you consider their secondary. I know Josh Norman gets a lot of love, but Patrick Peterson still a better player than Josh Norman overall. And I just think that if you look at their weapons, like, compare their receivers to Carolina's receivers, I don't know, just down the line, I think that they're the more talented team. They don't play as well on the road, I'll give you that. But I think Carolina, not quite as good as their 15-1, but I'll take the Cardinals to go to the Super Bowl on the road.
Wow.
Yep.
Huh. I don't really know how to react to that. We'll have to wait and see and brag
but
next week. Who are they going to play?
I haven't had a great run of playoff betting, so don't take my
good
word for
know.
It.
Don't take your word for it. Well, then let's take your word first on this AFC Championship. How do you feel about this game? I'll word it this way. Is this going to be a Brady Manning clash for the ages?
Does this still count as a Brady Manning clash? That's what I want to know first.
There you go. Okay, that's what I'm. And Peyton Manning has admitted that so much this past couple of days. He's admitted it. He knows that he's sort of along for the ride, and he's just trying to make as many plays as he can and help the team in any way possible. He knows that this Broncos team goes as their defense goes, and he knows that he doesn't have the athletic ability that he used to have. He knows he's almost done, okay? So this comes down to the Patriots scheme versus the Broncos defense. What is Wade Phillips going to do? And can his players, who are a superb, excellent, superior group of defensive players this year in the NFL, they have done an excellent job all year. They have really locked down a lot of teams, Calvin. And it's a little bit of a concern because they are playing well and that's what it comes down to. I'm not worried about Peyton Manning and the offense. I think the Patriots' defense is good enough to stop them. But the big issue coming out of Denver is Chris Harris. What have you heard about his health? People are worried about his health over there in Denver. And I just – not necessarily what have you heard about his health, but do you think that if he's hurt and really only playing with one arm, like some of the rumors I heard – is that a big enough factor to really make Denver's chances slim?
No, because they still have Tlaib, and they still have what's the other quarterback that they have? I can't remember right now. I feel like obviously Harris is the best quarterback. I still think their secondary is good enough, especially considering the fact that I wouldn't be especially afraid of the Patriots receivers, particularly on the outside. Obviously, Gronk's going to be a problem anyway, but Chris Harris is an undersized corner who probably wasn't going to be on Gronk in any case, right? You can't put a dude his size on Gronk regardless. So I think that, I don't think there's an issue as far as that goes, but I don't know if that swings it one way or the other for me. To my mind, I don't know. I don't know. It's interesting. Let me ask you this question, though. Let's say Peyton Manning wins this game. Let's say the Broncos win this game 18-13, okay? And maybe they get a pick six, right? So Peyton, and maybe it's 17-13, let's say. And Peyton Manning gets, one touchdown, and then they get a field goal. And then the Broncos sort of do the same thing, and they win the Super Bowl. Does that affect the eternal Peyton Manning Tom Brady rivalry and who has hand in that situation? Or do you think it doesn't matter at this point? Because people seem to only be saying this matters for Brady's legacy. But if the defense carries Peyton Manning to a title, does that affect Peyton Manning's legacy?
You know what? I don't think it really affects anyone's either one of their legacies. I think if Tom Brady loses this game, then we'll have to wait and see how it all plays out. But if he plays well and loses the game, then I don't think it hurts him that much. And I think that he still goes down because he's not done. He's going to keep playing for a few years. He's got another couple shots at this thing to go back and do it again. I think he still goes down as having an excellent season and has sort of made himself a significant contender for the best quarterback in the history of the game, up there right with Joe Montana. And I don't know if there are another two guys that you put in the conversation of the best of the best. As far as Manning's legacy is concerned, Calvin, I don't think that there's anything that he can do in this game to make himself, to cement his legacy more. I think if Denver's defense carries them to a win and he goes to the Super Bowl and he has a week of rest and he finds a way to make some spectacular plays in the Super Bowl and they win that game, then that will put some sort of a legendary status on him. He's going to turn into this mythical creature and ride off into the sunset as the legendary Peyton Manning because he played well in one week in San Francisco after having a week off. In that scenario, I think that he is helped. But this week, I don't think this game means a whole lot for either one of them. I don't think either one of them gets elevated or falls down, regardless of the situation, unless either Brady plays horribly and he's a main reason that the Patriots lose, or Peyton Manning finds a way to look like the Peyton Manning of old and is the main reason for the Broncos winning. But I don't feel like either one of those scenarios is very, very feasible.
Rory, I was surprised to find out recently that despite Manning's overall record against Brady, the record of the Patriots against Peyton Manning, it's only 2-2. So this is essentially, especially if you factor in the fact that Peyton Manning, I don't know, I actually think that Peyton Manning...
Are you talking about just the playoffs?
Yeah, playoffs. People want to point out Manning's career record against the Patriots and say, look how poor it is. But they also want to point out Peyton Manning's playoff record and say, look how poor that is. But the fact of the matter is his playoff record against the Patriots is not bad. It's 2-2. This is, in a sense, this is going to be the deciding factor just between them, right?
Yeah, and if you want to look at it like that, sure. But they haven't met that much. So if you're looking at a deciding factor as far as which quarterback is better, then you still have to look at Tom Brady because he's won more Super Bowls, right?
I don't know. To me, that's not the entirety of the argument, because yes, he's won more Super Bowls. That's correct, right? But the first three Super Bowls they won, Tom Brady was a different quarterback than he's been in since that period of time. Tom Brady in the era when the Patriots were essentially a dynasty was not a throw down the field type of quarterback. He was a conservative quarterback, and they sort of won on the back of their defense and limiting mistakes. Is that not true? I mean, look at his numbers all of those years.
Oh yeah, they were dink and dunk, small completion. That was the way they did it.
They were
long drive
teams
down the field, ball clock possession, all that.
Yeah. And all of those Super Bowls ended with Adam Vinatieri moments more than they did Tom Brady moments.
Yep.
Yeah, so yes, he has won four Super Bowls. I don't take that away from him, but I don't think that, like, that's the only argument. I mean, we can readdress this Brady-Manning argument another time, but I guess I don't just look at, in a vacuum, the four Super Bowls and say, well, you know, if that's the argument, then why is Terry Bradshaw not a part of this conversation?
No, you're right. You're right. Peyton Manning is quite arguably...
He's on again. You're in cutout mode.
I said you're in cutout mode now. Yeah.
Oh, weird. All right, well, maybe we should move on and kill it then. But the point is that Peyton Manning is arguably the best regular season quarterback of all time, Calvin. You can't really argue that. He's right up there.
Yeah, why don't we kill it? We'll talk about the NFL coming to L.A. next week. I'll still have the same opinions.
All right. Wow, that really just happened, huh? I'm breaking up. You're breaking up. I can't understand you. I can't understand what you're saying.
That was really annoying.
Yeah, I did that myself. I did that on purpose. Yeah, just to show you how it could be. But that's not how it is. So, was that clear? Did that come through clear?
Yeah, I love that you doubled up on the too many cooks trap. You could have gotten to something else.
I could have. Maybe I'll just play them all. Play them all on the way up. Yeah.
I don't need a goddamn snap.
Ooh, that's loud. Yeah, that is loud.
Because I'm pissed off for greatness.
All right, Calvin, good night.
All right, good night, everybody.
Yep, that'll do it for us. We're out. Talk to you next week. And tune into the Celtics postgame show right now. They're already on. Go. Go.
Did they win?
I don't know, actually. Maybe we should tell the people before we, let's see. Wasn't even watching because they're doing our stupid show. Did they win?
Right.
It's got to be over. No, they lost 115 to 109. Jess Thomas and Corey Prescott have you covered over on the other station. Go listen. Go now. And good night.
Good night.